All right, good stuff. There he goes, Roman Harper from the SEC Network, kind enough to join us here at the College Football Hall of Fame. SEC Media Days continue, and special thanks to our travel partners for allowing us to be live in the ATL. Another special guest joining us here on Digital Drive. He is Chris Gordy, the host of Locked On SEC, also works at Sports Talk 790 down in Houston. Gordy, thanks so much for the time, man. How are you?
Yeah, Brad, good to be on, man. Thanks.
So, a lot we can dive into. Part of me wanted to start with Texas, but I just, as a guy who covers the entire conference, I'm curious, what storylines have you been paying most attention to, and will you be paying most attention to throughout the course of this week?
Well, I just tweeted it out. I mean, Archmania is going on right outside this, on the other side of this wall right now. I mean, they had the podium in the main room, and I mean, it was like six deep of reporters before he even got there, and he just sat down, and everybody is huddled around him hoping to get a piece of Arch. It's crazy, man. I mean, we knew it when he was first coming out of high school, and they're like, he's going to be in college, the next Manning. You knew hype was going to be around it, but it was all about, where is he going to go? And it was like, well, he's not going to go to Ole Miss. He's not going to go to Tennessee. He wants to create his own path. And when he chose Texas, you know, it was like, oh, that's right, they are coming to the SEC, so there will be an SEC connection there, but choosing his own path. And, you know, now the time has come. He waited his turn behind Quinn Ewers. Yeah, I remember this time last year. I had people asking me, do you think Arch is going to go on the transfer portal? I'm going, for what? He picked Texas, and he's going to start when his time is ready. And they were like, well, is he really going to sit behind Quinn Ewers? Yes.
Yep.
And I thought it worked out perfectly. You know, you never wish injury, but Ewers gets hurt for a couple of games. Arch got his taste of starts. It's funny too, as somebody said, well, he only started against Louisiana Monroe and Mississippi State. And I'm like, he can't pick and choose when Quinn Ewers gets hurt. Right. Like, it just so happened to work out that way. Now, what would have been really interesting if Quinn was hurt for the Georgia game and Arch had started, what would that have looked like mm-hmm. for a whole game? You know, we saw it for small doses, you know, but I love his mobility. I mean, I think that's not talked about enough. That 67-yard run he had against UTSA when he got in there, and it was like, okay, he's got wheels. He looks more like Grandpa Archie, not Eli or Peyton,
yep,
or even Cooper for that matter. So I bring all that back to say, like, all the hype is around Arch, and yet we have no idea what he's going to look like week one. We have no idea. You know, I keep saying, I think the game plan week one needs to be, don't even put the ball in Arch's hands to win or lose it. It should be focused on that run game. It should be all about C.J. Baxter and Trey Wisner. How's that offensive line doing getting a push? Yeah, he'll make some throws here and there, but, like, I wouldn't expect a 400-yard passing day with four touchdowns. Like, I don't think that's going to happen week one. And how the schedule sets up, you come back home with three cupcakes weeks two, three, and four. Mm-hmm. I almost look at it like, just get out of Columbus with a win.
Yeah.
Find a way to win and come back home, and you can let Arch air it out as much as he wants those next 3 weeks. Let him build up his confidence and all that. Or does Sark want him to earn his confidence week one and right. say, we're going into the belly of the beast. We're going to Ohio State, and we're going to show them what the hell we have in this arm cannon of Arch Manning. He could do that. I just think, in my opinion, I feel like they're going to play this thing safe or close to the vest. Let's get out with a win, no matter how ugly it is, and we'll get ready for the rest of the season.
Hey, 13-10 counts the same as 44-41, you know, just whatever it takes to get a
and
W.
Either way, you're going to have the overreaction headlines written. Either people are going to go, oh, Arch, you know, not as good as we thought. Oh, he stinks
yep.
and all this. Or it's going to be, if he throws for 10 yards and they beat Ohio State, he's the Heisman winner right now.
Give it to him right now.
Cancel the race. It's over. I mean, it's just all the extremes.
You're saying people overreact to week one?
Yeah.
That must be new. Gordy, you've been covering this conference a lot longer than we have. You've been to this event more times than we have. You talk about the Arch Mania. Do you remember a time when an individual player has brought this much attention to this event?
There was two. I mean, obviously it was Johnny Manziel post 2012.
Yeah.
You know, after the excitement of that win in the Heisman, then the start of the 13 season. And then, of course, Tebow. I mean, Tebow Mania was as big as Arch Mania. So, you know, that's kind of what it is. And we joke Arch Mania, it's not really a thing, but Tebow was pretty big. I mean, and he was the recruit that everybody wanted. He almost went to Alabama, goes to Florida, plays a little bit as a true freshman on that national championship team. And, you know, I think you know, and he was the model citizen, much like Arch. Like, he was everything you wanted in a player. Yep. Said all the right things. Now, he was more on the religious side, I guess. But, like, Tim Tebow was a rock star. And then, you know, going on to win another national championship. So, the Tebow effect was real. And then the Manziel effect. Now, Manziel was the partier, man. Manziel was the signing autographs for money. Like, Manziel was the bad boy of the SEC.
Yep.
But, again, the hype around him, everybody wanted a piece of Johnny Football. And so, yeah, those are the three that immediately come to mind, at least in my time. But yeah, I mean, it's just guys that bring a lot of hype, but backed it up. And that will be the question with Arch. Does he back it up?
Yeah. Chris Gordy from Locked On SEC and Sports Talk 790 in Houston joining us here at Texas Sports Unfiltered on Radio Row, Digital Drive, whatever the hell we're supposed to call it these days. All right. From a team standpoint, Gordy, like, we'll all get the ballot at some point. Maybe, yeah, I just haven't checked my email. We already have gotten the ballot, but we'll get to vote on our projected order of finish in the SEC this year. Where do you have Texas? How do you think the Longhorns stack up? Do you think this team should be considered the favorite going into this season?
It's so tough, man.
Yeah.
I want to see the offensive line in work. I feel like they're pretty good. We saw a little bit of Goosby last year, but I want to see the rest of that line and just see how they gel and how they perform together. Because, again, they may be fine. It may be a nothing burger. But what if they're not? What if they do struggle? What if Arch gets sacked five times against Ohio State? You know what I mean? Like, so not knowing that, again, everybody keeps telling me, don't worry about it. Texas is the best team in the SEC. Go ahead and put them one or two or whatever. But most people consensus, it sounds like it's Texas and Georgia, mm-hmm, are the two. And Georgia, to me, we interviewed Kirby Smart earlier. I told him, I said, you're the one coach that gets the benefit of the doubt for me from a standpoint of roster overturn, because Georgia doesn't rebuild, they reload. And that's just kind of how they've been. Texas, I don't know if they are that. Sark has had some great recruiting classes so far, but he lost a ton for that team last year. Is it reload for Sark? Mm-hmm. And if it is, great. They're going to sustain the success, and Texas is going to be a problem for a lot of people for the next couple of years. Or does it take a tick back? And a tick back might be an 8-4 season, nice year. There was one or two games of Arch threw a pick, good learning experience. They'll go to the Outback Bowl or I don't know, whatever it is, Cheez It Bowl, whatever the sponsor is now.
Yep.
You know, go to a nice bowl game, and then 2026 is the year that the Texas Longhorns will take college football by storm. I mean, there's that thought, but again, it's we're going off of hypotheticals. LSU has built up, their roster is loaded with transfer portal guys. We have no idea what the hell they're going to look like.
Right.
Like Jack Pyburn and Patrick Payton and all these guys they got through the portal off the edge. I don't know if they're going to gel. If they do, LSU is going to be in Atlanta. They're going to be a factor.
Yeah, I was going to ask, and maybe you just answered it, like, who's that third team? Because it does feel like, I don't know if Texas will end up being one or Georgia will be one, but I feel like it's one and two.
A lot of people are going Bama. I don't buy it with Kalen DeBoer. Nice guy. I've had a chance to talk to him before. I think he's a good football coach. I don't know if he's cut out for the SEC.
Mm.
And that, look, whoever was going to follow Saban, it was going to be tough. But four losses? Losing to Vandy and losing to Oklahoma at both 6-6, like, that's not good.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, color me a pessimist. I need to see it. He's got to prove it to me. Whereas other people are the ultimate optimist. They're like, oh, no, Bama's back. Bama didn't go anywhere. It's like, did you watch the games last year? Like, look, monster win at home against Georgia, monster win on the road against LSU. But both those games are canceled out because of the losses to Vandy and Oklahoma, in my mind, like, yeah. So it's a wash. So, again, Kalen DeBoer, great guy. But look, I thought Brett Bielema was a hell of a coach at Wisconsin. He came to the SEC, got eaten alive at Arkansas.
He did.
Some guys just aren't cut out.
And now he's at Illinois doing a great job.
He's doing a great job. He's a great coach. Does it make him any worse of a coach because he failed at Arkansas? No. It's just some guys are not cut out for this league. Color me on the territory of I don't think Kalen DeBoer is cut out for the SEC.
I'm not allowed to say that as a Texas fan. Like, I feel like I have to bow down to Kalen DeBoer because his Washington teams beat Texas 2 years in a row in bowl games.
The Alamo Bowl doesn't count.
I know. One of them doesn't count. Nobody really cares.
And the playoff
the one that
game, hurts. Quinn, if he hadn't played so poorly in the first quarter, they were coming back. They just kind of ran out of time.
Yeah, they were right there. The defense couldn't stop Michael Penix. And then we're ripping Band-Aids on old wounds right here. What about a surprise team, Gordy, in the SEC? Like you said, everyone's talking Texas, Georgia, Alabama's been trendy. LSU's getting a lot of love this week. Kind of feels like that's tier one in this conference. Anybody I didn't mention, is there any other team that you think can actually get to Atlanta by the end of the year, or if you want to take surprise like Vanderbilt, where they come out of nowhere and end up being a bowl team.
I think Vanderbilt will beat somebody we don't expect.
Okay.
And that's the Diego Pavi effect. He's just so good. I saw a mock draft the other day as Eli Stowers is the number one tight end off the board.
Wow.
So if they've got the first round pick tight end and Diego Pavi and the rest around them, and they bring back a ton of their defense. I interviewed Martel Hite the other day, Randon Fontenot. They bring back a ton on that defense that was already good last year.
You know they're beating Auburn because that's what Diego Pavia does. Right?
Well, yeah, I mean he owns Hugh Freeze, but to me it's Vanderbilt's interesting. The schedule's tough. I would have liked to have seen them have five more minutes against Texas last year. It got a little hairy there.
Yeah, I would not have liked to have seen that.
and then Auburn is the ultimate wild card. Like, how good is Jackson Arnold? He was a former 5-star recruit that dealt with all the injuries at wide receiver last year. Now he's at Auburn, where they got stud wide receivers everywhere. Eric Singleton from Georgia Tech and Cam Coleman and all these guys. So if Auburn's offense is fixed, they're going to be a problem for a lot of people. So that might be a little surprise team. And then I love Taylen Green at Arkansas. He went under Bobby Petrino. He told me 2 years ago when he picked Arkansas, he picked him because Petrino was showing him film of Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying Taylen Green will be Lamar Jackson, but that's who he wanted to be. He was very productive last year. He had a lot of picks and some fumbles and all that. If he fixes those mistakes and he's cleaned those up and he's a more mature quarterback this year, Arkansas, I mean, could be that surprise team. Now, I say surprise, maybe 8-9 wins is a surprise. I don't think they'll get to 10 or even Atlanta.
Man, I'll tell you what. We just talked to John Neighbors, who you obviously know very well, and he's like 5-7, 6-6.
He's Debbie Downer. I mean, he is. John is the ultimate pessimist.
He is. All right, last question, Gordy, before we let you go. Last year it was three. This year, how many SEC teams do you think will make the college football playoff?
It's four. It's got to be four. I think you'll have the two teams that play in Atlanta. I think you'll have two teams right below them at 10-2. The problem was the league cannibalized itself just a little bit too much last year. If Ole Miss wins at Florida late in the season like they were supposed to, they're in.
Yeah.
If Alabama wins at Oklahoma late in the season like they're supposed to, they're in. Heck, if A&M doesn't go on the road and lay an egg at South Carolina, they were knocking on the door and maybe would have had a chance. But, yeah, I think the league, everybody wants to poo-poo on the SEC. They were this close to having, four teams in last year. I think they'll have four teams in this year.
I love it. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
And real quick, opportunity to plug what you've got going on.
Locked on SEC. It's podcast is growing and growing and growing. Our chase is we're just past over 9,000. Video subscribers are trying to get to 10,000. So if anybody watching this, could just do us a favor. Look up Locked On SEC. Hit subscribe. It takes 10 seconds. We really appreciate that.
You're the man, brother.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks for doing this. Chris Gordy, check out the work he does, Locked On SEC. It's fantastic. It is a must watch and a must listen for all Texas football fans and all SEC football fans. And, you guys know the work I do with Locked On Longhorns. Gordy, another one of our great staffers that we have with the Locked On Network. Good conversation there. All right, a couple more sponsor shout outs. Got to give some love to our friends at Covert Bee Cave. If you're in the market for a newer pre-owned car, truck, or SUV, go see our friends at Covert Bee Cave. I get it. There's a bunch of different dealerships around Central Texas. You don't need to go from place to place and spend a bunch of your time looking for a new car. Just head out to Covert Bee Cave. They've got 42 acres of cars, trucks, and SUVs, new, certified pre-owned, used, whatever you're looking for, cars, midsize, crossovers, minivans, trucks, it's all there in one place, Covert Bee Cave. And of course, you could shop their inventory online at covertbeecave.com. Love them and the work that they do, and some love to our friends at Woods Comfort Systems. It's hot. It's hot in Atlanta. I know it's hot back home. If your AC isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing, don't try to tough out these red-hot Central Texas days. Call our friends, the experts at Woods Comfort Systems. They've been doing HVAC in Central Texas for nearly 70 years. They also do plumbing now. So any HVAC issues, any plumbing issues that you have, call on the experts at Woods Comfort Systems. You can find them online, woodscomfortsystems.com. You can give them a call, 512-842-5066. It's Woods Comfort Systems, where comfort is our middle name. All right, another conversation. This is one that I know y'all haven't seen before because we just recorded it an hour or two ago. Joe Cook from Inside Texas. We've talked to SEC people. We've had OU people. We've had Arkansas people on today's show. Let's actually talk to a Texas expert about the Longhorn showing at SEC Media Days and some expectations for Texas football going into 2025. Without further ado, my conversation with Joe Cook of Inside Texas. Joining us now in the ATL, our great friend Joe Cook of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com. You can follow him on Twitter at JosephCook89, and more importantly, the former co-host of the 1-0 podcast with yours truly. Still the best work that either of us have ever done.
I think it's up there. I don't know if I'm ever going to top those days.
No, that was a lot of fun, and boy, 1-0. What a time for Texas football when that slogan was a thing, huh?
You see Brian Kelly's trying to pick that up this year?
That's not good.
Good luck. Good luck.
I am taking the under on LSU now. After I heard him say that yesterday on day one of SEC Media Days, I'm like, under. Hammer the under on LSU. They're going to have a horrible season. He's getting fired. Didn't they want Tom Herman at one point in Baton Rouge?
They did. I remember that Thanksgiving night.
Maybe they can get him.
Joe Oliva, interesting guy.
Oh, man, good time. So Joe's here. We're here in the ATL. We're at the College Football Hall of Fame, and it is Texas Day, day two of SEC Media Days, and the Longhorns going on this afternoon. Maybe going on right now, depending on when you are watching this thing. But Joe, we'll I guess we have to start with Arch. That's what everybody wants to talk about. I'm sure since you've been here, you've had 10 random people come up to you asking about Arch. We've had a bunch of that, too. Your thoughts, your expectations on what we're going to hear and what we're going to see surrounding Arch Manning's first trip to Conference Media Days.
I think with Arch, he's really good at giving the right answers. He doesn't get too introspective. He doesn't go deep into the emotional, the emotional foundation of who Arch Manning is. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from his family. He knows that, okay, you know, you can be a football guy and you can give football answers and that'll work. But you can also still be a regular guy, and you don't have to try too hard at it. And I think, especially at a place like this, where I doubt they let him go through the entire car wash, but they're going to give him to some of the big people like CBS and ESPN and let him do all that. You're going to hear the same thing, and you're probably going to hear the same thing when you get him at Texas, you know, locally. Like, I'm here to be a good teammate. Quinn was a great role model for me. Can't wait to step in. I'm really excited. I love my uncles. You know, I love my grandfather. It's great. Yep. Coach Stark's got a great offense. Yeah, I like Ryan Wick. Just stuff like that. Like, you're not going to get – and, I mean, maybe it's because we're around it all the time, and so we're like, oh, here it goes again.
Yeah.
But you're just not going to get anything super deep from Arch, and that's fine. You'll get some fun stuff, I feel like, from Taff and A. Hill. But I think people around here, the way I've been – because a lot of people think, and okay, I get it. He's only started games against ULM and Mississippi State, and those they won 5 games last year. I'm just thinking, if you're replacing a quarterback who was a 3-year starter, who led you to 2 playoffs, who won a conference, this is about as good of a replacement as you could ever ask for.
Oh, yeah.
To be your next starting quarterback in your second year in the SEC. He is who he is as a player, as a person, and he's got experience. He's not just a true freshman coming in. So this is about, you know, yeah, you have the last name aspect, but even if you remove the last name aspect, still a great situation for Texas.
I appreciate a rational Arch Manning take, because it feels like everyone else has to say, oh, he's the best thing that college football has seen in decades, Paul Feinbaum, or, oh, he sucks. If he was really good, he would have played over Quinn Ewers last year, Steve Spurrier. So it's nice to hear a rational take about Arch Manning. But you're right. I mean, we've all heard it in Austin. He doesn't give you a whole lot, and that's fine. I'm perfectly comfortable with my quarterback not dishing out bulletin board material. Right. I wouldn't hate it if today all of a sudden Arch is totally different and he's like, oh yeah, we're winning the SEC.
Red Bull hat.
Yeah, the orange shirt. He's got all the things. Yeah, we're winning the SEC. Like, we're going to be back here in 5 months. We're going to be playing in the championship game. And oh, this year we're beating Georgia.
I'll take a Waymo when I get there to the Mercedes-Benz.
Playing all those cards. But no, that's not what you're going to get from Arch. He gives 7 to 10 second answers. He doesn't get himself in trouble. And he's been preparing for this. Like, you could tell part of his just preparation into becoming the starting quarterback at Texas has been how to deal with the media. And it's not just since he got to Texas where that stuff started. I mean, Arch Manning has had a spotlight on him since he left the womb. I heard Chip did an interview with David Cutcliffe, who, of course, coached both Peyton and Eli in college. And Cutcliffe was like, yeah, no, we sent a scholarship paper to the hospital the day he was born. So literally, since he came out the womb, there has been spotlight on Arch Manning.
Duke or Ole Miss or Tennessee.
It's a great question. Yeah, we got to check the timeline on that. But he has been trained and he's prepared for this moment. So yeah, I don't think whatever he says is going to make a headline, Joe. But I don't think he's going to say anything that is actually going to create too much headline.
The headline is going to be "I'm ready for this moment" or something like that.
Exactly. So that's Quinn. What about from Steve Sarkisian? You know, Sark usually gives you a few things, and he'll have his press conference downstairs. He'll make the rounds up here. Anything that you're expecting to hear, maybe anything that you want to hear from the head coach this afternoon?
You know, I always look for differences, and similar with Arch, you know, if Steve Sarkisian talks, I'm okay. What did he say? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, sometimes that's wasting 30 minutes of seeing him on Greg McElroy, and, you know, that is what it is. Sometimes he's on Cam Jordan's podcast at South by Southwest, giving a CJ Baxter injury update. Mm-hmm. So I listen to everything.
Yep.
And so I'm looking for differences. You know, what's he saying that's new? What's he saying that I haven't heard before? What Inside Texas hasn't heard before from like program sources, things like that. What is new for this year? And, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of talk about the receivers and the transfer portal additions.
Yep.
He's gotten a handful of opportunities to talk about guys like Emmett Mosley, Jack Endries, go on the other side, Marad Watson, LaVon Johnson. I think what I want to hear is stuff about that, those new players, because I think, obviously, I think everybody has some high expectations for Endries, kind of bring him in to be tight end one. And then I think Marad Watson, he's going to end up being a guy. I could see him starting, and I see him carrying on what he did for Syracuse in a different shade of orange.
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking to hear that as well. What are your biggest questions now, looking at the team aspect, before I ask you about Ant Hill and Michael Taft? You know, your biggest questions about 45 days out from the Ohio State game. What are you still looking to see as we get closer to the start of fall camp and then the actual season?
I think you got to look at O-line. And kind of similar, I've had a canned answer for Arch. I've had a canned answer for O-line. It's like, look, if you're losing four starters, that's tough. But if your replacement options are all either third or fourth year guys or a five-star, it's a pretty good situation.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to replace starters. It's college football. And if you don't go to the portal, you got to go to your guys. Well, your guys include Cole Hudson, who, yeah, he's not a returning starter, but he's played a lot of football.
Sure.
Your guys include Neto Umeozulu, who's a fourth-year player and who's a big boy. You know, that's a good way to look at it. And then Trevor Goosby, is he going to be Kelvin Banks right away? Probably not. But did he show that he could play as well as Kelvin Banks can in certain situations against really good competition last year? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Your returner, you know a little bit about with DJ Campbell. A lot of good pub for him in the offseason. And then right tackle kind of feels like the big remaining question. Is it going to be Brandon Baker? It's pointing that way. Could Andre Kojo compete? Could Nick Brooks, you know, come down from the clouds a little bit and be in a good situation and play some right tackle? Who knows? But those are questions that all college football teams have. You know, you got to replace starters. You got to replace contributors. And I think with the offensive line, yeah, is there a lot more questions there than at any other spot on the offense? For sure. But are those questions like that debilitating? No.
Yeah. Some of the other questions I have for you on the offensive side of the ball, the running back position, right? You mm-hmm. brought it up a moment ago. I'm sure somebody's going to ask Sark for an injury update on CJ Baxter and Christian Clark. But for you guys, with what you're hearing at Inside Texas, what are you hearing about CJ Baxter and Christian Clark, and what type of roles do you think those guys are going to have behind Trey Wisner, who of course is the only SEC runner coming off a 1,000-yard season?
Baxter, I think the news is as good as it can be. You know, that was South by Southwest. He talked about, yeah, feeling good about him, you know, making progress, all that. You hear making progress, feeling good. Sometimes they'll even say ahead of schedule. Yep. And you're like, okay, is that really true? But Baxter's going through those offseason workouts. He's doing the player run practices, 7-on-7, and he's moving. And that's as good as you can ask for. That also means, I don't know if they're limiting it, but he's moving laterally, and that's the big battle when you're talking about those ligament injuries. So he's doing that. But then, of course, no pads are on.
Right.
No helmets are on. There's a mental thing to get through. There's a physical aspect to get through. You know, at a certain point in practice, there's going to be some tackles, and it's like, okay, you better get ready to take this on because you haven't done it.
So how – okay, that's a good segue right here because, like – last year, both C.J. Baxter and Christian Clark got hurt during fall camp, but it was non-contact injuries. So if you're Texas, if you're Steve Sarkisian, how do you handle your running backs this year? Because you obviously don't want to lose two again before the year starts, but you want to make sure you're ready to go for maybe the biggest game you have all season in week one. How do you kind of deal with getting your running backs up to speed?
You can't change.
Yeah.
I think you've changed your spring. I think you've changed your summer. But you're getting ready for a football season. You're getting ready to play the national champions. And, you know, maybe you limit some of your days where you go all the way to the ground, but you already did that in the spring. So you got to make up for it at some point. I think you just got to do what you do. You know, football is Bud Elliott says this, it's not a contact sport, it's a collision sport. Mm-hmm. You make choices when you put on the pads and the helmets.
Yeah.
That's one right away. And I think when you put on the headset and you put on the practice schedule and you put on everything on the calendar for the team, you got to get ready. You have to do it. And so will they be smart with how they individually handle Baxter and Clark? I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to play football.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to see what type of roles those guys have in week one. Because obviously weeks two through four, pretty easy opponents you should beat handily, and opponents that you should get a bunch of guys reps again.
Right.
But in week one, is that a Wisner and Gibson game? And maybe like give Baxter and Clark a couple of snaps? Or do you say, this is one of our biggest games, these might be our best running backs, we have to have them on the field?
I think you have a talented enough room to really probably go committee.
Yeah.
You know what you have in Wisner, and he's reliable, but who knows how much he's going to be able to elevate his game. Gibson, well, I hope he can pass protect, because he was so bad at some point that they didn't even try it.
Right.
He had two pass protection reps all year last year. So maybe Wisner gets hot, and then maybe Gibson gets hot, and then you can try Clark. I think that could be a game where you can hit them with a lot of different looks and freshness. And then over the course of the next few games, okay, this one's yours, this one's yours, this one's yours, before you go to Florida. But if someone gets hot, then you know what? Like, if you're cleared to play, go for it.
You're cleared to play.
You're cleared to play.
Yeah.
Which means that you're clear to be tackled. You're clear to take a hit. You're clear to fight for the end zone. You know, again, you're playing football.
Right, 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 right. Joe Cook of Inside Texas joining us for a few more minutes. Before we go to the defensive side, Joe, I want to ask you about the wide receiver position, because, you know, Sark, Texas was in the mix for Eric Singleton. He's at Auburn. Texas was in the mix for Zachariah Branch. He's at Georgia. That was kind of it in the first window. Then Texas went out and got Emmett Mosley V from Stanford in the spring window. It's a lot of unproven at Texas commodities on the outside. When you're breaking in a new quarterback, that scares me a little bit. Where are you at in terms of your confidence that this wide receiver room is going to be ready to go from day one?
I like the starters. I really like Ryan Wingo. He entered last year and played a lot last year as an athlete. He had to get better at being a receiver. Mm-hmm. Already has good rapport with Arch, came in at the same time. Saw them connect a couple times for scores over the course of last season. So feel good about where they're at. DeAndre Moore, I think, has really taken another step. I'm curious to see what they do, because Emmett Mosley played over the middle and in the slot for Stanford because they needed him to be close to a pretty poor quarterback. But he made a lot of great plays once he got back from injury last year, had some good games against the best teams that they played. Mm-hmm. And I think just because he was a West Coast player playing in the East Coast League, there wasn't a lot of hype around him. And he ended up being a pretty good player last year. And he's the type of player where, okay, he's not a five-star out of high school, but he's also not, you know, as heralded as Isaiah Bond was. But he's in between. He's a prospect with some level of development, but he still has another step to be able to take, not from the high school level. And that's something that we've seen, you know, Matthew Golden did that last year.
Sure.
Matthew Golden was a great player at Houston, and then he took his game to another level at Texas. And I think they're trying to get something similar from Mosley. They have some positional versatility with him, with DeAndre Moore. You'd like Ryan Wingo to be an outside guy.
Yeah.
After that, that's a good question. You know, Parker Livingstone, someone who had a lot of good attention on him. Aaron Butler, someone. And then you have those freshmen. Dalen McCutcheon's been surprisingly the most talked about freshman from that crew.
Very surprising.
So Texas keeps a short wide receiver room, but they have to find someone, because even though Sark keeps a short rotation, it's got to be more than three.
It's got to be, yeah. And look, Texas stayed pretty healthy on the outside last year. I know Isaiah Bond dealt with a couple of hampers, but for the most part, they stayed healthy on the outside. So in case that doesn't happen again, you've got to have a little extra depth there. Onto the defensive side of the ball, Joe, I'll ask you about Ant Hill, because he's here. If you could ask Ant Hill a question, and there's a good chance you get the opportunity to today, what do you want to hear from the captain of the Texas defense?
I want to know what he's done just to help in coverage. You know, you watch his film from high school. That guy can go downhill really fast, and he did that as a running back. And teams, you know, one of the reasons that he didn't play as much during his freshman year, and you saw a lot more David Benda, was because of coverage. And it's not to say David Benda was great at it, but he was better than Ant Hill. He moves to Mike linebacker, takes over for some really quality players who were before him, Jalen Ford and DeMarvin Overshone. He's the next guy, and he plays at Mike, and they don't put him there unless he's able to make it work in coverage.
Sure.
I think that's a big thing for him, because I don't have any concerns about him coming downhill, playing the run, meeting guys in the hole, rushing the passer, anything like that. I think he's rightfully ranked as one of the best players in college football. He's not going to be here next year.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to ask that cheeky question. He's going to be like, oh, I don't know, maybe, but he's
the type of guy who might actually say, no, like, I'm done.
Or he may actually say, like, no, I'm coming back. I got to finish my degree. Like,
yeah.
But
that's why he's at Texas. He's playing school.
And then his agent goes, like, hey, you know, the first round money gets you a lot more than what you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, okay, I understand. Three years and go. But I'm interested to see what he sees from maybe someone like Brad Spence,
yeah,
who's going to be his backup. And I'm interested to hear what he says about guys in front of him, like at the defensive tackle position. He's had a lot of help over his first 2 years with great defensive tackles that make his life easier. And last year, we didn't expect them to be, they weren't Sweat and Murphy quality, but they were still really good, maybe best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little bit of a surprise. This year, we don't know exactly what that's going to look like. How, you can't really know until pads come on, but maybe what he's seen from those guys in front of him as far as being able to make that defense work.
Yeah, I'm sure Michael Taft wouldn't tell you he's concerned with the secondary despite the losses of Jahdae Barron and Andrew Mukuba, but I'm curious. To you, Joe, like those three guys together, everyone knows the backstory. They've known each other for years. They're all from Central Texas. They all train with the same trainer. And you could tell the communication and chemistry was elite for Texas. And that's why the pass defense went from one of the worst in the country in 2023 to one of the best in the country last year. What's your concern level? Obviously, Michael Taft's a stud. Manny Muhammad's there. I mean, you've got plenty of talent back there. But what's your concern that maybe the secondary takes a step back here in 2025?
It's going to look different because right now there's not that lockdown corner. You could play 10-on-10 because you knew Jahdae Barron had his guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Jalen Gilbo can do that. And that's going to alter the structure of the defense. Maybe that means you don't see as much three deep where you're relying on Manny Muhammad and Jahdae Barron to cover that third of the field and have it handled because they've had it handled. Maybe you have to play some different coverages, lighten up some responsibilities. And while that may still help the pass defense, that changes the rest of the defense. So I'm really curious if they're going to be able to keep the single high aspect of it because that helped them so much in that run game. They had the defensive backs to do it last year. I don't know if Jalen Gilbo is able to do that. I think playing corner is going to be an easier position for him because Star, you're in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
The guy's got two-way goes on you. You're asked to make sure that, you know, help in the run game. I think that's a tough position, and I think he handled it well, but corner's different. And having a Thorpe Award-winning corner can change how you play defense. And if Texas doesn't have that, they're going to have to change how they play defense.
That'd be awesome if Jalen Gilbo could be the next Jahdae Barron, right? And it feels impossible to predict that you're going to get another Thorpe Award winner, but a guy who goes from that star position to outside corner and doesn't miss a beat, that'd be huge for this Texas defense. Last thing, Joe, before we let you go, you going to Magic City while you're here?
No. I'm probably going to stick with all the corporate media stuff and stick with that. I'm a type of place.
Yeah. I don't know if there's going to be strippers at the media party tonight. I'm not sure if they're going to be invited there. Wouldn't hate it.
So here's the thing. I've been to Atlanta a few times I don't know if it's underrated and it's probably a tourist trap, but the Westin has a restaurant at the top.
Okay.
That has a restaurant that kind of spins around and you can see all of downtown Atlanta.
I like that.
It might be a tourist trap. It may be, $11 for, something of lesser than Altstadt quality,
right?
But you're still at the top at the 90th floor looking around.
Thank so maybe that's Altstadt something I do there. Have you done that before? You just keep
long
hearing about
time
it.
Ago. Okay, it's the Sundial.
They've got one of those in Dallas at Reunion Tower, which is kind of cool, but it's very overpriced. Same kind of thing. It's
and
like,
Reunion Tower is only so tall. This right. one's up there.
You're right. Yeah, that's interesting, Joe. How do the people find you?
InsideTexas.com. $1 until kickoff of the Ohio State game. So go and join Inside Texas on all our socials. And I'm at Joseph Cook 89.
Boom. You're the man. Thanks for doing this.
Always fun, man.
All right, brother. Joe Cook of Inside Texas joining us here at SEC Media Days in Atlanta. All right, so we're going from guest to guest here. Thanks to Joe Cook of Inside Texas for joining us here at the College Football Hall of Fame. And here's a face and a voice that y'all know very, very well. Our man Chris Phillips from SEC Unfiltered, kind enough to join us live in the ATL. See, Philly, what's up, brother?
PK, what's up, man? It's good to be back. I was about to say, it's a very familiar setup. Feels like home, man. It feels good.
You look sharp, man. You're always one of the best dressed guys at these events.
Oh, dude, I'm just something light. just doing what I can.
Something light.
Trying to keep up with you.
You got guys in t-shirts and shorts walking around.
It'll be a little bit more casual for me as we go throughout the week. Some of the SECU gear will probably make an appearance. But, no, man, it's great to be here with you. Obviously, in Atlanta, we did it last year in Dallas. And just a sign that football season's close, man. It never stops for us, right? So, but no, it's a lot of fun. Glad to be here. So.
I think you've already made the announcement for your week one.
Oh, yeah.
But, okay, no, I just want to make sure I'm not breaking any news.
No, we're going to Columbus. Yeah, it's well documented. Pinned all of our socials and everything. So if you've missed it at this point, yeah, we're going to Columbus. Going to follow the Longhorns up there. I'll be rocking burnt orange. It's no secret who we're pulling for. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, I've never experienced the Shoe. Thought about for maybe a millisecond going to LSU Clemson, but it was a pretty easy decision. I mean, just it's the rematch of the playoff. It'll be a top five game. Obviously, you see the Arch Mania that took place today. That's only the beginning. It's already began, but this is really only the beginning. It'll be him against Julian Sayin. And I mean, a game that, you know, I don't think that's a game where the loser of that is like knocked out of the playoff conversation by any means. But, you know, it's an important game for the SEC for perception. Haven't won the national title in a few years. Obviously, Ohio State, the reigning national champions. And I think Texas certainly is the favorite out of the SEC to win it all. So, you know, it's a big game from the perception standpoint. There'll be stars all over the field. You could argue Ohio State's got the two best players in the country on offense and defense, Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs.
Yeah.
Obviously, guys like, you know, Ant Hill and Colin Simmons would have something to say about that on the Texas side. And then certainly maybe Arch Manning will put his name in the hat for best offensive player. So it's going to be a great game. I can't wait. Wish it was a night game. I know it wouldn't help Texas, but, you know, wish it was a night game for selfish reasons. But I can't wait for that, man. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be awesome. And you're wearing a burnt orange shirt up there, huh?
Something of that nature. Yeah, we've dropped some SECU team colorway stuff. So I know at minimum I'll have on either maybe you can help me out. I'm either going to go the black hat with the burnt orange SECU or the white hat with the burnt orange. I don't know. I know Texas doesn't get dabble in black a whole lot,
right,
but I might have to just go with the white, the icy whites, you
that's
know?
That's a clean
Texas
look,
will
man.
Be rocking the icy
yeah.
whites.
Yeah,
so we might have to go with
the
icy
team,
white.
You know, if you're rocking the white hat.
Yeah. No, like we're going to be, like I said, we're going to be openly up there pulling for the horns. There's
like
no question.
I like that. So yeah. I know the answer to this question, but you haven't said it on these airwaves. Where are you at with this Texas team going into 2025? We'll obviously go around the conference. I want to get your thoughts on a number of teams, but it is Texas Day here in Atlanta. A lot of folks very high on the Longhorns going into 2025. Of course, we all know what they did last year in year one in the SEC. Where are you with Texas? Do you expect them to be a factor despite everything that they lost from 2024?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a factor. I think they're going to be a major factor. I mean, I think there's four teams right now that I look at, and certainly a dark horse could come outside of the top four. And I mean, after last year, man, I'll never go into a season ever again. Not saying I did last year, but assume that I think I know, because last year just everything got turned on its head and everything we thought was up was down and left was right. And it just was nonsensical. But, you know, I think Bama, Georgia, Texas, and LSU, I feel pretty confident about like that top four. I expect the SEC title game to be a duo of two of those four to make it.
Sure.
You know, certainly I think Florida could play spoiler and be a dark horse. Maybe Oklahoma could play spoiler. Maybe Auburn. Like, I think there's some teams that maybe have some really high ceilings, but also really low floors, very volatile teams. But, yeah, I mean, for me, I've got Texas in the SEC championship game. I've got Bama finishing first in the league playing Texas, but I've got Texas hoisting the trophy, kind of going back, getting some redemption. But, yeah, I mean, be a factor. I think you'd be crazy. I think personally you'd be crazy to say that Texas wouldn't be a factor in some capacity. I mean, the only way – and, I mean, I was talking to some other folks. The only way maybe they wouldn't is if the quarterback play just completely fell off a ledge. But, I mean, even if Arch disappoints, they've still got a good enough roster to go at minimum 10-2 and make the SEC championship or just make the college football playoff, which is what it really comes down to. So, yeah, definitely high on this Texas team.
All right, CP, we've got to pivot because Anthony Hill is joining us now. You're the man, brother.
I'm not quite there.
We'll talk to you soon, man. Anthony, what's going on, man? Brad Kellner, pleasure. Thanks for joining us, man.
Headphones on.
You're good. Thanks, CP. All right. Very special surprise.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Anthony Hill joining us here at SEC Media Days. There you go. Don't mess up the hair, man.
Yeah, man. It's all good.
You got more hair. You got better hair than I do. So it doesn't matter for me. Good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me.
You're looking sharp.
Thank you.
Where'd you get this suit? What's the story behind this?
I got this from Soto. It's actually from the season. I never wore it. Then I've been having these shoes for a little while. I just feel like it matched perfect for the outfit. So just put it all together.
Did you save it for this?
I didn't necessarily save it, but it ended up playing out that way.
Yeah. So what does it mean to be representing your football team, but also your university here in Atlanta?
It's been pretty cool. Like, this has been a good experience. It was better than I expected. It's been a nice vibe getting to meet all these different people and talk to all these people. So it's been pretty cool.
I saw a quote you said earlier. It's a good day to not be Arch Manning. What's it like just looking over to your side and seeing all of those people surrounding your quarterback?
It was pretty funny to see, but I feel like he takes it all in well, knowing who he is and understanding what comes with it. So he does a good job of handling everything.
Yeah. How excited are you? I mean, for a lot of fans, right, media days, it kind of signifies that the season is right around the corner. How excited are you to just get back on the field after the way things ended last year?
Man, it's really exciting. I've never been so excited for a fall camp in my life. So I'm just ready to go out there and go compete with my teammates and get ready for the season.
Yeah, I know you're always excited for any new season, but is there a little extra juice because you're playing the team in week one that ended your year last year?
You know, we try not to think about that and focus on it, but of course it's in the back of our minds and we want to go out there and go get the win.
Okay. I love a good answer right there. So no revenge. You're not talking about
no revenge.
Game. You're just focused
on us.
I love it. I love it. Some guys that maybe fans aren't talking enough about, right? Everyone's talking about you. They're talking about Michael. They're talking about Arch, the guys who are here. But who are a couple of potential maybe breakout candidates for this team, some guys that are impressing you in practice that could make big plays for this team this fall?
I feel like Kobe Black has been having a good summer, a good fall, so I feel like he's going to be a guy that we're going to have to watch out for on the field.
Okay. Anybody on the offensive side?
Offensive side. I feel like he's in a breakout, but Ryan Wingo's been doing a great job and been having a great fall.
Excited about him.
Yeah.
All right. That's great. And what are some of the big games that you're looking at? Do you focus on like certain matchups that you have keyed up on, or are you just taking it week by week whenever you play?
I kind of take it week by week and focus on. But you know, of course, when we play Oklahoma, that's one of the bigger games. When we play teams like Florida and teams like all these SEC games are pretty huge and pretty important, because you know, every week it shifts every week. All these teams are really good.
Absolutely. How much fun was it last year on the field putting on that golden hat, celebrating that win up in Dallas?
That was one of my favorite moments of the season, man. Putting on that gold hat after the game is extremely important.
Is that your favorite memory as a Texas Longhorn so far?
I'll say winning a Big 12 championship right now is my favorite, or beating Alabama.
Yeah, okay. That's a perfect segue, because I want to know your goals first.
Yeah.
So I'll ask it as two separate questions. What are your individual goals? What do you want to accomplish here in 2025?
My goal is to win the Buckus, win the Gursky, and win those awards. I want to go win them. And season-wise, I want to go win a national championship.
Okay. SEC championship, the national championship.
Yes, sir. I
want
to go win
the order of preference.
Yeah.
Okay. So I saw a mock draft with you. I don't want to put you on the spot and be like, is this your final year? But I saw a mock draft where you were going in the top five.
Yeah.
You play a position that's not always regarded as one of the most important or premium positions on the football field. What does it mean to see people think that highly of your game, that you could be in that conversation as a top 5 or 10 pick whenever you do go pro?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, but at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't matter. I see guys being projected first round all the time and don't go there, but at the end of the day, you got to handle what's on the football field and what's in front of you in this moment.
Do you feel like you get enough love and respect? I think you know how much this fan base loves you and Texas fans appreciate you, but do you feel like nationally you're talked about enough as one of the best, not only linebackers, but players in the sport?
I try to stay in my square and just focus on what I can handle. I don't really care about what other people really think. I just focus on what this football team and what I got to do to help us win.
That's awesome. What's your favorite part of being a Texas Longhorn?
Favorite part? Just living in Austin. I feel like living in Austin has been amazing towards me. I got staying in a good place and being able to go around in all these different neighborhoods and live and see some of the stuff we've seen in Austin has been pretty cool.
That's great. Have you played the new video game yet?
Of course. I've been playing a little bit.
How good is Texas? I haven't got my hands on it yet.
They're pretty good. I mean, okay. we got a pretty good team on there.
Are you happy? What are you, like the third or fourth highest ranked player in the game?
Third or fourth. Yeah.
Is it high enough? I mean,
I'm happy with my rating, 95. Okay. I feel like I can be happy with that.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We know you've done 100 of these today. That's all
court.
There it is. It's all good, man. You're the man. You're looking sharp.
Thank you.
Thanks for a few minutes today.
And, Thanks for having me.
See you back in Austin.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. There he goes. Anthony Hill joining us here at SEC Media Days. Looking sharp. I couldn't pull off that suit. I couldn't pull off those shoes. Definitely couldn't pull off the hair for a number of different reasons. Good to see you, brother. Thanks so much. Anthony Hill spending a few minutes here. Thanks to the folks at Texas for making that happen. All right. Matt, you want to come on for a few minutes here? Very unexpected. Had to say goodbye to Chris Phillips. I feel bad, but, you know, I think he understood that that Ant Hill came by, and I would have loved to talk to him for about 30 minutes, but I didn't. I saw Thomas looking at me, and I'm like, I don't want to tick him off too much. But Matt Galatson, one half of Open Gym, joining us now. Of course, Open Gym with Matt and Patrick will get going in about 9 minutes officially. You guys are going to have great sound. You were downstairs hearing from Steve Sarkisian, hearing from Arch Manning, hearing a little bit more from Anthony Hill. What are your big takeaways from what you've seen on Texas Day here in Atlanta?
The Arch mania is palpable.
Yeah.
That's definitely one thing. If you look downstairs, there's probably some screenshots on Twitter somewhere. I think we tweeted one out from the Texas Sports Unfiltered account. Basically the entire media room is down there surrounding him. And, you know, you kind of feel bad for the other guys because they're, you know, they got a decent media contingent, but everybody's here to see Arch, and he's carried himself extremely well. He's a very humble guy. He answers questions very well. He's, says all the right things at all the right times. So that's been good. And, you know, I've been really impressed with Sark and just his answers to all these questions. I mean, he's been put on the spot a couple of times. It was early on in the media session downstairs with the whole contingent. He was asked about their goal line struggles right out of the gate, and he answered that very well.
What do you say? Is that
you know, he just said that that's something that they obviously are going to work on this off season, because the last couple of years it's been, you know, they're 10 yards away from playing Michigan in a national title game against Washington. And they were, you know, 10 yards away from going to overtime with Ohio State. So that's obviously going to be a big focus of theirs. And they're going to work on that real hard this offseason and through training camp. He also had some really good updates about CJ Baxter, which I was very pleased with. He talked about how he is exactly where he wants him to be in terms of his recovery. And he's on pace to, you know, to be ready to go, but he's not going to push him too hard to get there too soon. He just wants him to be comfortable, and like, not just from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint as well in his ACL recovery. So a lot of good stuff out there. And also Michael Taff, you know, you have to mention the tie that he was wearing as well, commemorating all the victims of the Camp Mystic disaster down there.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't, you know, I've been here doing the show, so I didn't hear Michael's explanation. I saw kind of from afar that there were a bunch of what looked like initials on there. That's really cool.
Yeah, he was really moved by that, and he wanted to shed a light on that. So that's, you know, props to him for being able to bring that up here, because that's a very important thing going on in the world right now.
That's a guy who gets it. I think there are plenty of examples over Michael Taft's Texas career that shows you, like, he understands, like, what he means and what just Texas football means to the community. But, at a place like this where – you know, you're representing your school, you're representing your university, but you're also representing yourself, like, to do something like that. Not a lot of people are doing what Michael Taft did with that tie today.
Yeah, he's a special kid for sure. And, you know, he really understands the way the world works, and he's a leader on this football team. He does everything the right way. I mean, he's out of every player on that team. There's state champions littering the roster. There's five-star recruits littering the roster. He's a guy that, you know, probably has the best story out of all of them. And I think that, you know, coming as a walk-on and then eventually developing yourself into an All-American type football player, you know, he really sort of got a perspective on both sides,
yeah,
of just, you know, the life of a football player and the work that it takes to get there. And obviously he was raised very well, and he's a special kid.
Yeah, man, it's a great opportunity for him to get to represent Texas. And like you said, I mean, the story, walk-on to All-American. And he's going to be playing on Sundays, right? Like, he could have left and got drafted this year, decides to come back for one final ride at Texas, and things work out. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be a first-round pick, but could he be a potential day-two pick when it's all said and done? If he goes out there, has another All-American caliber year, Texas makes another deep run of the playoff, it's not the most far-fetched thing to think that he could end up going relatively high next year. And compared to what he was and where he was when he started at Texas, it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, you know, maybe he won't be a first round pick, but if there's anybody on this football team that I would not count out to be in that position, yep, that's going to work his way to get into that position, it would be Michael Taft for sure. He works as hard as anybody else, and he might not have the you know, the athletic gifts of a Jelani McDonald or a Jonah Williams, but, you know, he's always in the right place at the right time. He always makes the right plays. He carries himself the right way. Mm-hmm. And I think that NFL teams are really going to value what he brings to the franchise wherever he ends up.
I think you're right. Any, I mean, your thoughts on this Texas secondary, I guess, as we kind of transition this to some team conversation. Obviously, Jahdae Barron's gone. Obviously, Andrew McCuba's gone. Those guys were hugely important to the success of Texas's defensive backfield last year. You feel like they've got enough talent with Michael Taft, with Manny Muhammad, and everybody else. You still feel like that can be a strength of this Longhorn football team in 2025?
Oh, absolutely. Sark talked about it earlier a little bit. He thinks this entire defense is the deepest that they've ever had, and I think it starts with the secondary. You mentioned Michael Taft and Jelani McDonald and Manny Muhammad, but you also have to take into account guys like Derek Williams, who are coming back, who weren't even on the field for the majority of last year, and Kobe Black, who's really, you know, expected to take a step forward, and Jordan Johnson-Rebel and Jalen Gilbo and all these guys who, you know, have been there and guys who are trying to make a name for themselves as well. The secondary is as talented as it's ever been. Jahdae Barron is obviously a huge loss.
Yeah.
That there's no secret about that, but they have enough players in that secondary to help, you know, replace that loss and potentially be even better on the back end just because of the sheer depth numbers they have back there.
So I don't want to steal your show. I don't know what you and Patrick have planned, but
I don't even remember what we have. I've been so busy today.
Been running around. We have not talked about this today. I know, you know, the news broke during the Lone Star playbook, so Jordan and Will gave their immediate reaction, but you know, it's always exciting when your team is on the clock, on the podium, whatever, at conference media days. When you can do that hours after picking up a five-star recruit, that makes it even cooler. Tyler Atkinson, the five-star mm-hmm. linebacker from the state of Georgia. Also, Georgia was talking today. I think Kirby Smart, who I don't know if he's ever really that happy, but had a little little more scowl on his face today, maybe because of that news that dropped. How big of a get for Texas to get a five-star linebacker, not just any five-star linebacker, to go into Kirby Smart territory and get Tyler Atkinson? That feels like a pretty huge deal.
Well, I think you can look at it two different ways. Number one, the way Texas recruiting has been going this summer, they kind of needed to make a splash at some point just to keep the fans happy, right? So you go get the number one linebacker in the country, five-star recruit. You get him out of Georgia where the talent is per capita as good as anywhere in the nation. And then you look at it another way. You beat Georgia for the second year in a row for the number one recruit in Georgia.
Yeah,
that is something that Steve Sarkisian can hang on his, you know, hang on his mantle.
Defensive player too.
Yeah,
like that feels like it means more because Kirby is a defensive guy.
Yeah, I mean, if it was a quarterback, it might make a little bit more sense, or you know, given who Sark is. But the fact that you can go into Georgia back to back years, get the number one defensive player, and take them from Georgia, like from Kirby Smart himself,
yep,
I think is just an absolutely massive win. And he's a super impressive prospect as it is, you know, one of the most physically gifted linebackers that you're going to see in the last couple of years. So he should fit in very well with what they like to do. And if Johnny Nansen gets to stick around for a couple of years, he should be able to do something special with him.
Yeah. I mean, some of the numbers, let me see if I can pull them up. I mean, it's video game stuff that Tyler Atkinson is doing in high school right now. How about this? Last year as a junior, for Grayson High School in Loganville, Georgia, less than 40 miles away from Athens, by the way, 166 tackles, 32 TFLs, 13 sacks, also had 3 PBUs and an interception as well.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves, don't they?
That'll work. And his team won a state championship.
Yeah, I believe that's Georgia 7A football, which is the highest classification they have there. That's the equivalent of Texas 6A football.
Yeah.
The competition doesn't get any better.
I was going to say, you said it, like per capita, Georgia's right there with Texas, with Florida, with California, is like the most talented high school players in the country. So he's not, you know, some questions about, oh, Arch Manning, who's he going up against in high school? Can you put that much stock in the with this kid, you know, he's going up against some really, really good talent and putting up absurd numbers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then you just look at the guys that have come from Grayson itself.
Yeah.
Dating all the way back to like 2011 or 2012 with Robert Condici going to Ole Miss. And then there's been just guy after guy that comes through that program that turns into an elite superstar at the college level. It seems like Tyler Atkinson has a really good chance to be the next one. I know they're really excited about it. Sark got asked about Tyler Atkinson specifically during the press, during the media thing downstairs, and obviously he can't answer that.
Yep.
He talked his way around it very well and about how, you know, just the value of being able to recruit nationally,
that's it,
is so huge to this program now. Now that they've been able to, you know, be in the SEC, it sort of opened that door, and you've seen the you know, the effects of that over the last couple of years, just with Justice Terry and Tyler Atkinson, but there's been plenty more as well that have come from, you know, the Southeast, where typically Alabama and Georgia and all those programs are just picking who they want. But now Texas is in there and they're making it hard.
It's cool to see. You got a quarterback commit from Florida. You got a five-star edge from California. You've got now a five-star linebacker from Georgia. You got guys from Mississippi and Louisiana. It's a national thing right now. And that's really cool. All right. 4 o'clock Central time. I see our guy, Patrick Davis, in the waiting room. PD, what's going on, brother?
I'm doing good, man. I've just been watching SEC Media Days all day long. I'm doing it from remotely. I'm from the house. I'm watching it all day long unfold. But it's definitely a lot of good stuff happening today. Yeah, anytime you get a five-star recruit and then you get to go out and have everybody freak out. We got to see Paul Feinbaum just kind of old man ogle Arch Manning from a distance.
Oh, boy.
That was fun. They showed the clip of him in the break shaking Arch's hand, turning around, looking at the camera and being like, boy, oh, man.
That guy who's around all these great athletes all the time and Arch Manning. Look, Paul Feinbaum has a lot riding on Arch Manning this year. You could argue Steve Sarkisian, like a lot of people do, but I don't know if anybody has more riding on Arch Manning's success in 2025 than Paul Feinbaum because of what he said a few weeks ago, right?
No, it's really hard to imagine. He's saying he's the best quarterback since Tim Tebow in college football. I mean, you get past Vince Young and then it's Tim Tebow. And then you got guys like Cam Newton, Joe Burrow, Johnny Manziel,
Jameis
Winston, Marcus Mariota, multiple Heisman winners, all these players, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, all these players. And Arch is the best already after starting 2.5 games. That's a take for sure. You know, I've said this to Patrick a couple times on our show. Let's let the kid play some football.
Oh, that's not fun. Come on.
Like before him the best ever.
I just like, you know, Paul Feinbaum is not a dude who sticks his toe in the water.
No,
Paul Feinbaum takes a swing rope into the middle of it. It's right in.
Well, it's the funniest thing ever because for years, Paul Feinbaum was dunking on Texas. Oh, they're not ready for the SEC. They don't know what it's like to compete in this league. They don't have a chance to win. And then now it's, Texas's quarterback is about to be the best thing the sport has seen since Tim Tebow 2 decades ago. And it's like, we keep receipts, dude. Like we know what you said, but you're right. He doesn't just dip his toe in the water. He is, he's 2 feet in all the time.
Yeah. He's guaranteeing Texas will beat Ohio State. He's picking Texas to win the national championship. All of these different things. And it feels like, man, just keep that take to yourself because we don't want you to jinx us typically he's not, you know, when it comes to predictions like that, he's not really on the right side of them most of the time. So hopefully it works out this time.
He was just giving friend of Open Gyms, Brooke Austin, I had him on the show, and he was giving him a hard time about some Georgia takes. I'm like, Paul, you can't be giving people hard times about takes. If you're going full in, you got to kind of go with it.
Goodness. All right, guys. Well, I'll leave y'all to it. Matt, thanks for popping on a few minutes early.
Sure.
Apologies to Chris Phillips, who's back just staring me down because I had to neglect him for Anthony Hill. But fun show here today, and I'll be listening to you guys. And, have a good one, guys. See y'all. Yeah,
appreciate it.